Media Network.
It's Roast with J.M. Bell and Tom. They're your Roastmasters.
Oh, hey, that's us.
Hello, Jeff.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man.
How are you, and Tom? I didn't know. I'm just caught on that we're doing our names at the top of the show. Hello there, Tom.
Yes. Hello there, Jeff. And how are you?
Are you ready to roast? I am so ashamed of myself right now.
Oh, boy.
I am ready to snap into a Slim Jim.
Okay, well, you better get snapped inside a Slim Jim.
Come on, brother. Well, what an auspicious start.
Yeah, we're just going to start. And, all I could say is somebody, maybe this was not the right way to start an interview this week. But I was asked the day after Christmas to go, so how was your Christmas? And I go, if my kids are happy, I am happy.
You know what? Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for just a minute.
Okay.
So,
what does that mean? With reduced resources, it's been dead.
Yeah.
I know some of my friends has been dead.
Yeah.
There haven't been any income or anything. It just will go, okay, how the hell are we going to get through this? And it's just like, okay, I've got to go on.
No, you got a head of steam, brother. Keep going.
The whole damn thing is like, we've got a couple of weeks here and I'm picking up doing some of the bookkeeping, but I need to be more busy than that.
Yeah.
You know, I expected to be a lot busier. I expected to have work. So the work didn't happen. And I'm just like, well, what am I going to do now? So we're, you know, doing stuff around the house. I'm just thinking like, this is really like ridiculous. I haven't had this kind of leisure. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know what to do with myself. I look at myself in the mirror as I go by the mirror and I say, you, what the hell? What am I doing? What am I doing with myself?
Dude,
and who are you?
It's time to write your novel. No laughing. I'm deadly serious.
Screenplays haven't worked.
Novel. Screenplays are annoying. Screenplays that you, what you do to write a screenplay is you write the book first, then you go in and reformat for screenplay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because otherwise you're writing in a format that is counterproductive to creativity. I have in the past, because I've written a couple of screenplays that are somewhere dying or dead. But when I've had to put them together, I sit down and write the damn things out as plays and then go back in and reformat. Because even with a play, you have a narrative flow. But with a screen format for TV or film, there's no narrative flow. It's just descript, you know, this tab, that macro, this button, that button, this format, that format. And otherwise, I can just come back and fix that all later. And at the end of the day, you got a story.
Yes.
So.
And you do. And that's the thing. And you see, I've really studied screenwriting and was very intensely into it. But here's the thing. If I have two or three other lifetimes ahead of me, I can go ahead and pour all that energy into that. And some people may say, well, that doesn't really sound like you. It doesn't sound, you know, but let's be realistic. You have to pick one or two things and be really, really good at it, if not one. And that's what I'm really good at right now is doing the ad thing. And that's good and that's fine. And that's where I'm able to be a provider for my family and give some opportunity to my kids. It may not be a faithful mistress, but it has provided.
Oh, she is not a faithful mistress. No, she likes them younger and cheaper all the time.
Yes. And the younger and cheaper that you are, all the better. And the more expensive and older that you are, boy, don't they want to ditch you just as quickly as possible. Yep. Although you may be kind of attractive for some of the things that you can do with your experience, that doesn't last forever. So with that in mind, I've done, you know, the voiceover thing. I've done the screenwriting thing. And I've pitched a couple of scripts for a total of like maybe 150, maybe 200 different pitches. And, you know, it means going down to LA. It means pitching here, pitching anywhere. I didn't care. I mean, I was just consumed with it for a number of years. But I learned the craft, and I learned all about it. And I learned it's fascinating to me. And there are fantastic scripts that are out there. But I see your logic by saying, write the novel first and then do the screenplay next.
Yeah. I mean, I'm having a problem right now with a secret project I'm working on, and it's comic book scripting, which is even worse than screenplay writing in so far as how your descriptions have to go. You also have to provide directions for your page layout. And
it's a visual.
Yeah.
It's a visual novel.
It's sequential art.
That's why they call it a graphic novel. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, we're visual people, and we're telling stories visually, you know, but it has to have a narrative, and it has to have a character arc. It's got to have conflict.
Yeah. As Todd McFarlane taught us in the 90s, you can't just be a really good artist. You've got to have a writer. Otherwise, you just have the most beautiful piles of garbage of all time. Image right now is how I think a company should run. You know, all of this stuff is creator owned. They just do a fantastic job, and that started because
I'm sorry.
Image Comics.
I was thinking Ron Howard's Imagine. Never mind. You mean Image.
Right. Yeah, Image Comics. And so everything is creative owned, creator owned. So that means that, Kirkman can do Walking Dead and then doesn't have to fight with the parent company, the publisher, when he wants to do TV. Or he wants to do licensing, or he wants to do, you know, merchandise or any of that. They have their percentages worked out, but it belongs to you, the creator. With that in mind, you know, it's, I don't know. I've been working with artists my whole life, you know, drawing with my hands. I'm not so great at drawing on a computer. I'm way better. But I got friends that have gone to work for DreamWorks, Pixar, you know, California Institute, and all I'm thinking to myself is I used to write script for these guys, you know, not that they did anything with them, but I would see what they drew and get them to draw things for me and do that years and years and years ago. And now that I'm apparently in the middle of my midlife crisis and I'm trying to find that thing, I guess my version of my sports car, I don't know, but I'm trying to find that thing that gives me creative fulfillment. I still love working the ad game like you do. I'm good at it. There's a certain muscle memory to it that feels good when I do it, much like playing guitar. It's like, oh yeah, I remember how to play a lick, you know, and you do that because there's a lot of times, I don't know if you've noticed this before, where you'll do a thing, a really cool thing, but you may not have a call for that for 2 or 3 years, and then you got to go back and remember how the fuck you did the thing.
Right.
Photoshop, Illustrator, stuff like that. So always back up your files, kids, because you never know when you need to go and steal a layer set.
And to me, the muscle memory gets more difficult with HTML and web and all of that. It gets a lot more tricky. Yeah. There used to be a time about 20 years ago when you used to think that we could do everything. So, of course, we've just crashed, tried to learn HTML coding, making websites, and just having disasters.
I'm still fluent in HTML.
You're good at it. There are people who do it. You're really, really good at it. And I'm not. I tend to go with object-oriented stuff, like Squarespace. And there was a thing from Adobe called Muse, which is beautiful.
Dude, wait. I have bad news.
Yeah, I know about Muse.
I loved it, and it's gone.
I know.
And, like, I can't... When I did an update to my Creative Cloud, it took it away.
Oh, really?
It's not even on my computer anymore.
It's gone?
Oh, yeah.
Those bastards. And they didn't have anything to replace it with.
They do. Which is interesting. They've got this weird browser thing. Sparkle or some shit. It's awful. Oh, it's just horrible.
There are a couple of those.
Yeah, but it's Adobe, and it is a turd burger. I needed to whip out a quick site the other day, and I'm like, am I going to fire up Dreamweaver you know, and code this goddamn thing, or am I just going to turn on Muse? And it just needed to be a couple of quick static images to throw up on an index page and leave it alone for a couple of weeks. You know, and I'm like, oh, I'll just fire up Muse. I go in, where the hell is Muse? Oh, I must not have installed it, which is weird because I love it. And so I went looking for it, and they're like, yeah, yeah, we quit using it. So they got rid of it in April of this year. I'm livid. Yeah. I want it back. I love
it. Yeah, there's, oh, people are pissed. People are really, really pissed. And so there were a couple of providers that used to give you different drop-ins, different capabilities in Muse. And the reason why we're getting really granular about this is because it allowed us the ability to make websites.
Yeah.
So if you're using WordPress, or maybe if you're using Squarespace or something, this is something that is similar, but it's as if you had InDesign, and it allowed you to build websites. And it was really, really great. There were other parts, for instance, like Muse themes or something like that. Huh. They have these web-based, you know, CMS solutions, like, which is like WordPress, but it's a little bit more fluid.
I have to learn
WordPress because I apparently, we're getting so much, you know, call to use it. I'm way behind. I got to learn how to work all that. I mean, I took editing this year. I took animation this year. So I'm just trying to make sure to just keep up the skill sets, because I don't want any gaps in my knowledge.
Yeah.
We can't have that. You know, it used to be just easy. You just did the board stuff
One of my favorite jokes of my entire life is that I got my MCSE with Windows 3.11. So I have a certification, and it is utterly pointless. But if I leave off when I got that certification, which I don't do because I'm honest in weird places, I can't get work with it. If I leave it off, I get more interviews, but they can look up the certification and find out how old it is. I mean, that's going way back. So, I mean, that's just right now I am trying to scrape together the money to get my certifications all up to date. And that's brutal, especially on stuff that I am up to date on because I use it a lot. But my certifications are several years old. And a lot of prospective, clients are just like, they want to see these things. It's annoying. Yeah, but you have a fucking medical degree. You can get that in the 40s and still be fine in the 90s and two aughts.
Yeah.
You bag with bloodletting to, you know, cure a fever. And it's just like, well, you went to medical school. Was it? Was it really?
Yeah. Ronnie Jackson, you know, you're really great. You definitely, you know, Trump is definitely 238 pounds. You are right about that.
Right.
You know, you are a top-notch, damn good looking doctor, and you just happen to be really, really good at what you're doing. You're not really very, very good at all. You subverted by Trump and bounced very quickly.
Yeah.
So I don't know how.
So Christmas.
Christmas.
We were talking about Christmas.
Yeah. Okay. My Christmas was good. The kids were happy.
If you just throw the emotion at them, you could do impressive Christmases at thrift stores, man. It's just, you just have to hit it with the right attitude so that the kids know, you know, what's going on. I mean, my kids were delighted. I got one of them a little VR visor that you put your phone into. Not expensive.
Cool.
You know, not expensive at all. And the other one got a 5-cup coffee brewer, you know, and my...
the magic of coffee.
Yeah. And then my ex got a book, and everybody seemed pretty content. I mean, that's what I could afford this year, you know? So that's what everybody got. You know, so I went over, talk about breakfast for a minute. I have a dish, a signature dish that I make.
Are you talking about Christmas breakfast?
Yes. But this is something I make all the time, and it's really easy. And it's basically just real potatoes, you know, pan fried, like home fries. Mm-hmm. And then I throw in whatever breakfast meats I have handy, and really, really thin, just a little bit, but thin shaved, almost razor blade shaved onion has to season the pan before the oil and potatoes go in. Easy.
Yeah.
Then the potatoes go in, salt, etc. Yada, yada, yada. Put it all together. Then take all of the meat and potatoes that are all crunchy out, dump like 6 to 8 eggs in, get those whipped until they're just starting to clump and there's just a little bit of too much moisture, and then you throw everything else back in. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Cover the fucker with cheese, put a lid on top, call it breakfast hash. Now, I make this because it's quick and it's easy, right? So lately, when I'm going over to cook for my kids and I haven't seen them in a week or 2 weeks, I want to make something fun and festive and different and exciting, like breakfast sandwiches, but we use toaster waffles instead of toast, you know, shit like that.
Right.
And
right.
I got over there and I had these, I was going to make little pancake sandwiches. So little McGriddles. Had figured out how to get the syrup in the pancake mix and everything, so it tasted good,
but
it wasn't sticky. And basically, when I got there, I was handed the stuff to make my regular weekend breakfast. This is why we have you cook, Dad. Make this. Okay, here's some pancakes.
Okay. There's no chocolates in them or raisins, but
no, I don't do that, man. I'm a simple guy. You know what? I can't stand a banana pancake. It is the enemy of the people.
Lisa will get up and she will make green casserole. She'll make chili relleno casserole, eggs, just fantastic stuff. We usually have some family get-togethers a day or two before, and we'll, you know, bring some of that home.
Yeah.
That is the breakfast. Wow, we really don't have very many breakfasts like that, but that is a perfect example of one where.
Yeah. Well, when I move into your backyard.
Yep.
When I pitch my tent city. But no, I went over and did breakfast for the kids. We did some presents and all of that, and then I loaded the kids in the car and we went and saw the Aquaman.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've seen it or not yet.
I haven't seen the Aquaman.
It is a delightful, entertaining, glorious mess of a movie. And if DC made more glorious messes like this, they would be competing with Marvel movies.
Oh, yeah.
This thing had flaws from top to bottom, but I for those of you that are giving me guff and rolling your eyes, go back and watch the first Avengers film. What a flawed movie. You know, problems all over the place. And yet, desperately entertaining.
Yes.
Hugely entertaining.
That is the thing about it.
Yeah.
Who directed this one?
I have no idea, to be honest. Yeah. You know, Avengers was Joss Whedon. This was, didn't care to learn it because it's a DC film and I figured it would either be Wonder Woman good or flat. And instead, it was a fun comic book movie. It was just, it was big and awesome and so pretty to look at. Which I think is why I think you'll like it.
Oh,
it is stunning. It is the way that Cameron wants Avatar to look.
Oh,
but
wow.
Doesn't quite have the creative depth.
Yes.
Oh my God, that was just the got a little cocky.
Wow. That's exactly what we need to hear at this time. James Wan is his name. He's an Aussie, and let's see. Oh, he's known for directing Saw.
That's right.
The Conjuring 2. Oh, Furious 7. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he's got some cred, and he knows what he's doing behind the camera.
Yeah.
So that's fine. And Jason Momoa is pretty. When directed, can be pretty funny. I mean, last night I want the kids to see a little bit of Justice League. I was just showing them the intro. I was showing them a few other parts. You know, just say, see, it's not completely bad. I mean, like, it's got good moments in it. It's okay.
It's got pieces, man. There are a lot of good elements to Justice League. Stapled together, it doesn't quite work. But there are a lot of really good single moments. Batman on top of the roof trying to catch the fear monster. Well, he's still got the bad guy that was robbing the bank with him.
Right. I saw that. Yeah.
That is a great Batman moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Bit of a great Batman moment.
And it works really well.
It's tragedy. It's Ben, but...
Yeah.
What can you say?
You know?
Yeah.
And then Henry Cavill shows up, and suddenly it's like, okay, Superman's way too happy. You know? I don't understand all that. But, so you can, with that one, you can totally feel the difference between Zack Snyder, you know, and Joss Whedon. And it is jarring. And the first time since Watchmen, I'm interested to see a cut of that film of Justice League that Zack Snyder put together, because based on his notes, and what we've heard from him on what his plan was, it sounded really good. He would have fucked it up because he's Zack Snyder, but you know, the way that he laid it out, and then you get Joss Whedon in there and they're like, punch it up, make it the Avengers. And it was, instead of being a good, you know, directorial fix or coming in to do it, it was more like a snub to Marvel saying, I can get jobs.
The thing with Joss, though, is that interpersonal relationship and that back and forth,
yeah,
dialogue that you get, and the thing with Zach, though, is Zach, the reason we're talking about this, people, is because the reason why he bowed out is because he had his daughter committed suicide while they were doing production. And he had to step out. There was just like no way.
The
film was not finished. And so they brought in Joss Whedon.
Right. Here's the thing, just to throw this out there. It turns out, due to leaked memos, that he had already been pulled from the project a couple of months before that happened.
Really?
Yeah.
It can't be that bad. Look what he's done. What was the problem? That's already out. I mean, that's bad. That's just insult to injury.
It is. I mean, it's. I thought Watchmen was an incredibly well-balanced film. I like it. I watched it again just a few weeks ago and was like, God, this is a good movie. You know?
It's powerful. I showed the opening to my kids, you know, with the Kennedy, you know, the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
frame for frame to the Zapruder film. I mean, it's so unbelievably well art directed. Maybe I've gone over this before, but just like, that's kind of like how you bring people into this. But it's a very dark superhero movie.
Yeah.
One of the darkest I've ever seen.
The fight scene with with Night Owl and the younger, you know, Silk Spectre when they get mugged is,
oh yeah, yeah,
you know, up until that point you're like, yeah, this is, ooh, wow, that's pretty intense, oh, that's pretty, and then all of a sudden it's just like, you know, bone, stab, gun, stab, cut, you know, pieces missing, falling off, all of that. And it was jarring, and it was jarring in a way that made me do my manly roar at the end of it. And even seeing it years later. And then you jump forward and you've got Man of Steel. And Man of Steel wasn't terrible. It really wasn't terrible.
It just seemed, this is the wrong word, just mindless amounts of like, catastrophic destruction, and I'm more of a let the small things speak.
Yeah. And it's a fucking origin story again.
I know.
And this was one of the least inspiring origin storytellings ever, even though it had some really good parts. Even fucking Kevin Costner like remembered he's an actor for a few minutes in most of those scenes. Go back and watch Silverado, and you get to see Kevin Costner act. It was amazing. Remember Silverado?
I know that it's Silverado, but I don't mean to hijack this whole thing. But to me, the formula, and this is a conversation I want to have with Oliver Willis, who's a real Superman devotee. Sure. I mean, Oliver Willis. And the thing that from my reference point for the first Superman by Richard Donner, what really makes it in these two pieces, the Man of Steel and the original Superman, it is the human moments. It's the moment where you've got that wide shot in the Donner film when after his stepdad dies and they're in the field and he's there with his mom, and they hug. And there's just something really just like really powerful about that. It's Brando's voice when he describes the Fortress of Solitude and the idea, or the beginning when they have to send, you know.
This is a place that I've put together for you to learn. For you to learn Krypton. To learn to be a man!
This Fortress of Solitude.
Solitude.
He's just... I don't know. Maybe I was, you know, like, I don't know what I was experiencing at the time, but it just felt really emotional. And I thought that Snyder got that when he did Man of Steel. So every time you had human moments, you know, maybe Clark interacting with his mom, you know, just growing up, or just human back and forth, the human part of the story really, to me, hung together, and it was like it felt good. It felt really good. I wanted to see it. The trailer killed me.
Yeah.
I like, wow. So by the time we get to, you know, the finished movie, it just feels a lot of it's just pulled out, but it does have those emotional moments. So I didn't mean to hijack, you know, the talk about this, but to me, from the first movie to the Zack Snyder movie, they attempted to get those human moments. The rest of the film, I don't know.
Well, and that, and just Pa Kent dying in a fucking tornado. Whatever. Yeah. It's people on traffic. I mean, it was pre-cell phone video days. Save your dad, dick dummy. like, that is not the way that you kill off Pa Kent. You give him a heart attack. That's how Pa Kent dies. Because for all of his power... Clark Kent can't save his dad because he's not a doctor and he doesn't know about heart attacks. But when it's a tornado and all he has to do is be fast, he does have the power. And so it takes that helplessness away from him until the only helplessness we have is at the end when he's fighting Zod and he has to kill him because he doesn't know what else to do with him. And again, it's Man of Steel, not Superman. I'm fine with him killing Zod. Zod had it coming. You know, it's what they did with Zod's body in Batman v Superman that has me pissed off. Because that was a bad movie, again, with some really good bits in it. And then we have things set up, like the dream sequence and the post-Armageddon dream in Batman's head. And all of these things that were supposed to turn into something, but with Snyder gone... they're Easter eggs that we'll never see fulfillment. You know, so why did we see Flash coming back to tell him that Lois was important? And okay, so they came back and they used that when they hit, you know, Justice League. But I don't know. That's the other thing, is I've liked all the movies. I really like Ben Affleck as Batman. I'm just crushed at the thought of him quitting because he's getting so much shit for people. Just get through rehab, put the cowl back on, buddy. I'm team Batfleck. Absolutely.
Well, there was a time when I didn't really have any faith in McConaughey, you know, and that wasn't, you know, he's just serviceable. And then, you know, he comes along and comes back and, you know, does Dallas Buyers Club and then does True Detective.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that is the career defining role that he has done, and he continues to do really great. So, you know, Affleck does have the possibility of doing that. I mean, you look kind of hapless in Gone Girl, but that whole movie is just a horror show. So if you've seen, you've seen Gone Girl.
But have you seen The Town? Have you seen any of his directorial work?
I did see some of The Town.
Argo?
I did. What?
Argo?
Yeah. Argo's great.
Yeah. No, Argo. I think Ben Affleck is way more talented than people give him credit for.
Sure.
Especially as a director. But I enjoyed him as Bruce Wayne. I like him as Batman quite a bit. I'd like to see him do a Batman movie that's just a Batman movie to prove to people that he can do it when he's not weighed down by script problems and you know, editing flow glitches. That's what I'd like to see.
What did you make of Christian Bale as Batman?
Honestly, hated him. Loved all three of those movies.
Really?
Could not stand Christian. But he's got a slight speech impediment, that carries over from Bruce Wayne to Batman. It's like glaring. It is a glaring. And yeah, I just did that into a microphone because I'm an asshole. But you know, it's there. And then by the time we get to the third movie, he's turned the Batman growl into a bark, where you just can't understand a damn word he's saying. You know, and then you got Bane and no one can understand him because he's wearing a mask. And it's just like, oh my God.
I understand the quality of your pain.
And yes,
he's doing Richard Burton.
Yeah. I love all three of those movies. I do. Like, I love them viscerally. And yet at the same time, I'm like, I hate that casting. Oh, I'm not fond of that casting either.
But it's true.
Gary Oldman is Jim Gordon. Brilliant.
You mean, why am I blanking?
Aaron Eckhart? Is Harvey Dent?
No, you're thinking of, yes, I know what you're talking about. Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman. As Commissioner Gordon.
Gary Oldman was Commissioner Gordon, but Aaron Eckhart was Two-Face.
Yep.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
All this brilliant casting. All this wonderful casting. Even bringing in Maggie Gyllenhaal to replace Kate Holmes, whatever that was all about.
She was
a Scientology hostage. I know.
She was a Scientology hostage. So if we lose our Scientology audience right now, world, but there was only excellent. One that serves a fresh pot
of unless
I'm Tom, your host.
Zenans.
My mission is to
Zenu. Yeah.
Unless Zenu's telling you to pop over to the Patreon and donate, by all means.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? You're just bigoted against Scientology.
Zenu wishes it. The reason that I hijacked and we went here is so, yes, I saw Aquaman, and I recommend seeing it on the biggest screen you can get your hands on, especially if there's an IMAX hand. It is a spectacle, and it is fun. Did you see Sahara with McConaughey?
I love Sahara. And it's just, they spent $80 or more million dollars on that thing, and it's an entertaining movie. But it's like, it bombed. And I knew that they were looking for sequel in that thing and building on it. I love the cast. I love the storyline. It's kind of like a modern day Indiana Jones, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Problem is that it's based off the Clive Cussler, who and please understand that my personal library has at least 15 of his books, but he's a bad writer. He is a read it on an airplane when you know you're going to get interrupted, or better yet, listen to one of his books when you're driving, you know, back before podcasts. Yeah. You know, that's what Clive Cussler was about. Unless you're reading his autobiographies that have to do with treasure diving on sunken ships. Those are actually amazing. But when it comes to fiction, he's just over the top. It's like Roger Moore's James Bond on meth. So,
Thank you. That's Moore, to me, is the most cloying, there are pretty self-aware Bonds, but to me, it just wasn't working. Roger Moore Bond.
You know what? And he's my first Bond, so I still kind of like him. But
yeah, because it was mine was like Connery, and I'm still I like
Daniel Craig's my favorite.
I like Dan. I think he's done a great job being a real strong man in all this. I love the cool detachment in the 21st century.
Yeah.
Nobody's really come close. But that's an almost impossible job anyway.
Yeah, watching Daniel Craig do his honestly, it's like the books. You know, you had Sean Connery, who had just that tiny little grin letting you know that he knew what you knew. And then you had Roger Moore, who was just like, ha ha, I'm still doing the saint, but not really. You know, James Bond was in on the joke that he was. Then you moved on to Dalton. Dalton was too serious.
Way too serious.
But I liked him. I really did. You had Lazenby. Lazenby was great, I thought.
One movie. Just one. And if you watch that, that's not all that half bad.
No, he was good. I like Lazenby was, until Daniel Craig, Lazenby was my favorite Bond.
Really?
Yeah. I think, in fact, Her Majesty's Secret Service was my favorite Bond film for a long time. Only because I ignore the last 10 minutes. Because the last 10 minutes of almost every Bond film are terrible, and I pretend that they don't happen, and then they're really good spy pictures. You know? But honestly, I think the best fucking spy picture in the last 20 years was Captain America Winter Soldier. You know? What a wonderful spy thriller. I love that one. But, hey,
we can take a break right here and come right back.
I'm going to keep talking about movies.
We can talk about movies because this is the holidays.
Yep.
And what the hell not?
Nobody's listening.
Hey, Chucklehead, let me ask you a question. When you went to college, they made you pay for it, right? Higher education costs something. It's not free. But here you are, listening to the shows on the Defenestrate Media Broadcast Network, receiving a higher education than you can get in the Ivy League, and you're listening to it all for free. The Left Show, Hold 322, you're listening to all those for nothing. Do us all a favor, freeloader. Head over to theleftshow.com and drop a few bucks with the donate button. Think about it. If these shows go away, what are you and your drum circle gonna listen to while you're making patchouli incense and painting your protest signs? Limbaugh? Really? Get serious. TheLeftShow.com. Do the right thing for the left wing.
What do you miss when you miss The Left Show?
No, I don't think we'll have a Republican Party, but I think what replaces it will be worse. Because what's replaced the Democratic Party is not better. This is not the party of Kennedy.
No.
This isn't even the party of Johnson. And
Clinton took the party in a different direction.
And it wasn't even a bad direction.
It wasn't a bad direction.
But because of the middle of the road shit Clinton did, look, the only way we knew Clinton was a real Democrat was because of all the shit that happened at the end.
It wasn't because he got a blowjob. It was because he got a blowjob from a girl. That's why we know he's a Republican. That's why we know. That was the bottom line.
Fresh episodes every Monday on iTunes, Stitcher, and theleftshow.com.
Even if we didn't try.
True. So...
But- I, just yeah. one little quick little hijack before we get to where you want to go. I recall.
I'm just trying to get us back to minute six of the show.
I know. We're like 55 minutes in. We lost it a long time ago. I had Walken was a bad guy. And I was thinking, wait a minute. I don't think it, or did I actually ever see that View to a Kill?
Yeah.
And I think, yes, I do remember. I do remember vaguely, seeing that. And I went through it. And the funny is this guy is this like high-tech industrialist, Max Zorn or something like that. Yep. And he gets all of the other, wealthy industrialists on his blimp. Flying over Silicon Valley, and then he demonstrates to them that we are going to be the producers of all computer solenoids. We're going to create the world's biggest earthquake in Silicon Valley. Just thinking, this is supposed to be a bad thing. So one guy says,
how can I help?
I don't think I can do this. So he goes, well, very well. Well, here, Grace Jones here will take you to get a cocktail of ta-ta. And so he leaves. She opens up. They close the door. She opens up a trap door. He slides out of the blimp to his death. It's a fucking blimp.
Yeah. A Zeppelin.
Like,
A dirigible.
Oh, it is not a Zeppelin. It is a blimp.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Oh, fuck. And I was just like, what the fuck were they thinking? I think that that was probably next to the last one that they had done.
Well, I'm telling you, man, nothing tops Moonraker. Nothing. For okay. Just terrible, terrible, terrible movies. And I love it.
Really? I want to see that then. Okay. Yeah,
it is just, and I've read Moonraker, and it has nothing to do with anything that's in that movie. All they did was use the title. Same with Quantum of Solace, but, you know.
Right.
But yeah, no, man, it was Lazenby, then Connery. Now it's Lazenby, Craig, and Connery. You know, and there was somebody was shouting the other day about Idris Elba being the next Bond. I am way behind that. That is awesome. If that is true. Oh, yeah,
please. And why not? I mean, they have to. Is he not Scottish? I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. He can act it.
He would be the right guy.
Yeah.
He'd be the right guy. I don't care. I don't care. Put Tilda Swinton in there. I don't care. Some of the qualifications are they have to be Scottish. Nevertheless, Idris Elba, please, please, let's
Hello,
do this.
I am Idris Elba. Everyone likes me as James Bond. So I went and saw, here's where we're getting to.
Okay.
I got two more movies, and then we'll take 5 minutes and talk about just the terror of this. I don't want to leave the year talking about all of the terrible things that are happening, but that's what we're here for.
Well, that is what we're here for. But if we just 1 second,
this American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
And what's funny is the fact that here is our year in review, 2018, year in review.
Still.
It sucked. The end.
Ta-da.
Back to you.
Okay. So, two movies that could not have been more different, and yet both of them had me leaving excited and feeling a need to be creative. The first one was the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, I heard a lot about that.
Oh, man, what a good movie. Good balance, good character development. I cared about it, and it's Spider-Man's not my guy. I'm not a Spider-Man guy, you know? It's like, and if you don't know comics culture, you don't understand, you know, we like what we like but you know,
I like what we like. I think you're a Thor guy.
I love Thor and Batman, but they're my two guys, you know, anything else that happens after that, you know, I love Wolverine, but he's definitely not one of my first two. So, you know, I mean, that's just how it works. So I'm going into it with the mind of, I want to see this because I hear it's good. Well, turns out, you know, the voice casting is fucking amazing, and that Nicolas Cage as Noir Spider-Man was brilliant. I mean, and it was
really?
Yeah, it was fucking great, man.
He's always wanted to be. I mean, they even at one point thought that tried to cast him for Superman, and there's legend and lore to all that. But
have you seen the documentary? Have you seen the documentary about Tim Burton's Superman?
It was Tim Burton's Superman, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Nicolas Cage was going to be Superman.
No, I did not. I bet that is.
I am desperately trying to remember the name of it so I can tell you. It was on Netflix not too long ago.
No.
Oh, yeah, and it is a great 80 minutes. I mean, it is just the whole thing. It's like, what killed the Superman? I can't remember what it's called. I'll figure it out here when I feel like typing.
Well, they just finished. Yeah, I think Clooney just killed Batman, and I think that they were trying, Tim Burton's Superman. Wow.
Yeah, it was awful. Everything about it that you could see was awful, and yet you have a super fan in Nicolas Cage. It was back when he was still a real actor, before all his money problems, when he just decided to do whatever script hit in front of him.
Before Face Off?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I liked Face Off. It was a John Woo movie.
I love Face Off.
It's terrible, but I love it.
Terrible, but there's so much great overacting in it. Oh my god, I love it. Travolta and Cage. I mean, it's great.
I do not disagree. John Woo, I don't know how he didn't make it in American cinema, man. That dude, Go back and watch like Hard Boiled, one of his Hong Kong action thrillers with Chow Yun Fat.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny got me hooked on those for a while. And so he comes to America and I'm like, yeah. He did, I think it was Mission Impossible 2.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And then he did, and then he did a couple of other ones. And one was a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, Hard Target.
Hard Target saw Hard Target.
That was the one where he punched a snake unconscious. And Wilfred Brimley played a Creole poorly. I happen to have met Wilfred Brimley several times in my life. I'm terribly fond of the man and loved him in that movie, no matter how bad his Creole was. So bad. I guarantee. See, mine was even better. So anyway, Into the Spider-Verse was, again, one of those, watch it on a big screen. I don't know how well it's going to translate, you know, to living room television. It's good. It's very, very good. The storytelling is very good. You give a shit the whole time.
Mm.
But it is spectacle as well, you know, and that's it.
I saw a couple of minutes of the animation. It's just, it's very, very imaginative. It brings in everything cinematic into the animation space. You don't leave behind. It's what, pretty fantastic.
It's what Ang Lee wanted his Hulk to be, but I think he either lacked the technology, you know, or something. There was just something he couldn't do, so it never worked out. But so anyway, so Spider-Man, totally, you know, see it before it's out of theaters. You don't have to go to IMAX for that one, you know, even though it's fun.
Right.
But then we went and saw Mary, Queen of Scots.
Yeah. Now that's a very fascinating story because there have been movies similar to that. Elizabeth, for instance, that kind of touched on that. And who was in Elizabeth?
Cate Blanchett. Why?
Cate.
She was in both Elizabeth movies.
That's right. So in those movies,
besmirch the reputation of Mary. Mary was smart. Mary was crafty. Mary was shrewd, you know. And they took the Henry's point of view. All of those other movies that she was a fucking lunatic and a harlot and all that. And this one takes a much more honest look at. And this is where I'm going to say something that's going to just completely oppose what I'm saying now. But it takes a far more honest look at who the two women were, what a lot of their problems were, the behavior of the men around them. And then at the end, has a couple of fictional confrontations. Because we don't know. We don't know that they ever met. We don't know that they had words with one another other than what's been written. And this one took some liberties and made a wonderful movie. Not a great history anymore once you get to the end, but you know, what a great movie. And holy shit, Margot Robbie? Fuck.
Margot Robbie is awesome. And if you saw her in, what was it? The Tonya Harding movie?
Great. Tanya.
Tanya, yes. But you've got Saoirse Ronan and you've got her. To me, the thing in Elizabeth with Cate Blanchett, what I learned from that movie was until she took the mantle of this kind of deigned from God or like her powers bestowed from God, nobody would take her. No, nobody would take her seriously.
Right.
Nobody bowed to her and stuff. And I just like found that just incredibly like, but she knew that power and she used it. She knew the ignorance and she knew the stupidity of men around her. And she knew exactly how to acquire power and to keep it.
It's important to remember, you know, that Mary was Catholic.
Mary was Catholic.
And she was Catholic in a Protestant country, which is basically the problem with all the bad things that happened to her as far as Scotland went. It had a lot to do with the fact she was a Papist. So, you know, people took their religion way too seriously back then. That was back before we had what we have now, which is this weird Christian tag. where finally, for some reason, all of the different sects of Christianity have banded together to become this evil power for conservative politics worldwide.
Worldwide. And,
I liked it better when you fuckers were fighting with one another over whose comma was the right one in which retranslation of your shitty little book that nobody should read.
And what's interesting is how when you heard what Pompeo, the Secretary of State said yesterday at the day before, he said, I think he was at some kind of religious, like, I don't know, maybe some church, making some speech. I don't know what the hell he's doing there. I don't know why he's doing this, but he happens to say, he said something that was very anti-gay or something. And then he goes, we'll continue the fight. We'll stand on guard until the rapture.
Yeah.
So you mix governance and religion together, and then you've got this other strongman anti-democracy approach happening like a virus throughout the world right now. This is dangerous. Dangerous stuff. Of course, I like saying that. Dangerous stuff.
Danger. Really
emphatic. You know, like Liam Neeson in Schindler's List. It's dangerous to me. It's dangerous.
Danger, Tom from Roast. Danger.
We are the descendants of Billy Mummy. I have no idea what that means.
I don't know either. So, no, I really, it was, there was a good emotional couple of gut punches in Mary, Queen of Scots. Loved it. It's Oscar bait, I think.
Yep.
Which is fine, because I enjoy those too, but it reminds me that there's an imbalance to my entertainment viewing right now. That I almost forgot how to watch something that wasn't a superhero movie.
Well, I've got some family members that are burnt out on superhero movies. And I'm still wanting to go, please come. Please come to just the Infinity Wars. Just please. Because I want you to see Captain Marvel and then the next one. And so I have to pick my battles. But I highly recommend Roma on Netflix, and that is, if you really want to see an experiential movie, that is
it really,
really fabulous. Yeah, because
I looked at it and I went, well, I watched HBO's Rome, do I really care about this one?
Yeah, it is not at all the same. Okay, in any way. It takes place in,
Rome?
Roma. It is called Roma.
No, I'm saying it takes place in Rome.
Does not take place in Rome. It takes place in the Roma district.
Where the tomatoes are from.
In Mexico City.
Okay, then I have no idea what the show is about. Now I want to see it.
It's a story that chronicles a year in the life of a middle-class family's maid in Mexico City in the early 1970s, and Alfonso Cuarón did the movie. And as you can expect, that there are some ambient scenes that go on, and the way in which that Cuarón has directed in the past, like Children of Men, and has, you know, also directed Gravity, you know, that there are moments when the camera is kind of sweeping across a scene and people will fill it and they'll get empty again and they'll come back together again. It's what I'm trying to say is it is that type of Alfonso Cuarón movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a trademark. It's a wonderful way of storytelling. But in this story, a middle-class family's dad it's middle class. They have housemaids, people who help. It's sort of told through their eyes. But in this story, the dad, who's a doctor, leaves, doesn't come back. And the family has to make adjustments to that. We go through the housemaid's life. The people she gets wrapped up in, she gets pregnant, she loses a child. The family tries to rally at the very end, knowing, of course, that dad's not going to come back. So they take a trip to the coast. And what happens is they, some of the kids almost get swept away and drowned by the tide. She helps rescue them. Huh. And so it comes all the way back around again. And the story is it's fairly autobiographical.
Okay.
And it's really worth it. So definitely got, now, of course, there are other ones that are on Netflix that I keep seeing that are like Bird Box. So
I have the reactions I am seeing to Bird Box are intense and insane. And it looks like one of those movies that makes me uncomfortable in ways I don't like. And so I probably won't watch it. It's one of the right. reasons I don't watch horror movies in the first place is I did watch the Evil Dead remake. The kid from Mexico, I can't remember his name all of a sudden, the director, where he took it straight and did it serious. And it was a horror movie. It certainly was. Right. It creeped me the fuck out a few times. And, you know, I've seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, old and new. And there's a few that I've seen, but I think Clockwork Orange is a horror movie. Stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's very hard.
There are movies that it used to be that I would, they'd make me uncomfortable. I'd watch them once and never watch them again. Requiem for a Dream.
I don't know what it is now. I just can't.
I think it's because it's so fucking expensive. I am not going to blow $20 to $30 to see a movie that is going to make me uncomfortable and that really just doesn't do anything for me. And I think that's one of the reasons why I see so many superhero movies is it's like, I'm fine spending the money. I'm fine spending the money because I know what I'm going to get and I get what I know I'm going to get and I enjoy it, you know? And I am far more willing to take a chance on something streaming.
Yeah, no kidding. I think you're right. And it'll do just that.
Yeah.
I think that the last real nihilistic movie that I saw, and I love Jim Jarmusch movies, was Dead Man with Johnny Depp.
Oh, that was a great movie.
I fucking love that movie. I fucking love it. That's awesome. Front to back.
Yep.
It's like a lot of people have trouble with it because it's one direction and it's like straight to death. And you have to be prepared for that. But it in another way, think about it, is it's ironic because if not just for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, Johnny Depp not only gets wounded for sleeping with some man's like wife. They, you know, that woman dies, the lover dies. Johnny Depp, from that point on, is then mistaken as the killer of those two, and a manhunt is started. What happens is every single person he touches dies after that.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why I watched that movie, because I find that fascinating. It just how that works conceptually. So after that, we had the kids, and then it was just like, I can't deal with it. I can't fucking deal with it. I could watch parts of Old Boy, but then I'm like, I don't know. It's just the way I am.
I have to make a confession.
Okay, go ahead.
I have not seen any of the Old Boys.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually...
hang on.
A very friendly character. A very friendly critter.
I need to take a break for a second. I am not supposed to have a dog at the studio, so when the dog spazzes out, I gotta shut him up.
Oh. Well. Nope. Well done. And treat it with kindness and love.
Especially, and no one knows this because it's a podcast, but we're recording late, and I can't have him barking this late where I'm at. He'll wake everybody up.
It is late. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. God, we've been talking about everything.
Yeah.
This is a really, I don't even know if we need to get to the itinerary, but nevertheless, here we are.
Here we are.
Where were we? Oh, by the way, if you... There are two Old Boys. One of them is, I think, with Liv Schreiber, maybe. The other one goes back Brolin. To the original. What's that?
Brolin. It was Brolin, the younger Brolin. It was him. It was Elizabeth Olsen. And then there's the original. Is there not?
Ch- Chan-wook Park is right. the director, and it is probably one of the most amazing pieces of film. I mean, it just knocks me out. It's so amazing. I mean, there is a part that I must say that Daredevil must have been inspired by, where our hero, this is the log line, after being kidnapped and imprisoned for 15 years, Oh Dae-soo is released only to find that he must find his captor in 5 days. What a great summation. And what happens is there's one point where there's this hallway battle where he's fighting people. He's got some kind of big claw hammer or something.
Yep.
He's got people to the left of him, people to the right of him, and he's trying to, you know, battle and, you know, survive. And it's a huge one take, which is just like one shot that goes on for at least more than a minute.
Yeah. No, I've seen the original of that scene. And it's amazing. Right. It is fight choreography that is just, I mean, that's some top notch John Woo shit right there. The only thing it lacks is birds.
2003.
Yeah.
Just, Old Boy, definitely check it if you got the stomach for it. It's the shit.
I heard the James Brolin one wasn't bad either.
I'd like to see that just to check it out.
Yeah.
Way, but like when you start it off and it starts off in a field and there's this case, steamer case, and it opens up and a character comes out of it, you know, like he's been dropped there, and all of a sudden he's just got he's dropped in the middle of nowhere. Now he has to figure out how the hell he gets out of his dilemma. The one with Brolin is directed by Spike Lee. So it's really, really awesome. Yeah, Elizabeth Olsen's in it. Yeah, Sam Jackson. There you have it.
Yeah, I haven't seen either of them, and I need to see both of them. Definitely the older one first.
So since we're on really high conceptual or really intense films, what's your take on Black Mirror?
Oh, the new one? The Choose Your Own Adventure one?
The Bandersnatch.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Okay.
I will. Here's the other thing. And I admitted this at work the other day and was and got gasps. I've only seen one episode of Black Mirror, and it was the one with Bryce Dallas Howard, the social media one.
Yeah, that one. It is Twilight Zone in the 21st century. Not dial up to 11, dial up to 12.
Yeah.
Try to skip the first episode. The Prime Minister and the Pig Head.
Mm-hmm.
Just
season one?
You just don't.
Okay.
You just want to go there.
Okay. Yeah, and it's, I don't know why I haven't watched it. I think at some point in my head, and I've done this before where I mix shows up in my head, and so I was watching Black Orphan. Dog, you need to shut up. Come here. Come here. Lay down. Be quiet. No, you need to be quiet. I watched Black Orphan for a while and thought that I had that covered, and then figured out Black Mirror was something totally different.
Yep.
But awesome. I did that with Runaways and The Gifted as well, as I watched the first episode of The Gifted and then watched a season of The Runaways and was like, when are we going to get back to all that shit that happened in the first episode, and realized they're two different shows? Just could not be more diametrically opposed to one another either. They just were based on comic books, and I'm just like, I don't understand what's going on. When does it turn into that weird post-apocalyptic thing? But Joss Whedon did that with Dollhouse, where you've got, you know, the brainwashed prostitutes that go for 13 episodes, and then at the end of the season he has this weird post-apocalyptic something, and then was never allowed to tell that story, which is driving me nuts for years.
But, well, look what they did to Firefly, so.
Yeah, they killed it. Yeah. My buddy Forrest gave me the just this one day, this ambush. And he's like most, you know, sci-fi shows, he's like, they get really good in their second and third seasons, right? And I'm like, yeah, that's the rule. Anytime you hear guys talking about any Star Trek or whatever, they're like, wait until you get to season three, and then it's really awesome. And he's like, yeah. Think how good Firefly would have been if it had made it past half a season. you asshole. Oh, what a dick.
Nevertheless, highly entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that this is actually a great show as is without even having to dive into the simple fact that Orange Head wants to shut the entire border down.
My ex-wife and my kids are in Mexico right now.
So how are they supposed to get back if he does that?
Well, that's the question in my head. And I don't know whether or not to tell them they should come back or not. I'm enjoying this time with my dog. I love my dog. But, you know, they're in the house. That's where the dog should live. You know,
yes.
not on other people's couches. But, no, I don't know, man. It's, what more can we say? I mean, pretending this is a 2018 roundup.
Exactly.
You know, you have watched this guy go through a psychological slip to the point that there are hundreds of thousands of people not getting paid right now. A lot of them are in his supposed favorite parts of the government, and he's down just having a spaz. You know, I mean, one of the things that we didn't look at was the fact that his goddamn Twitter feed didn't go through its security screening before they started putting out pictures and on his trip to Iraq, and he outed a SEAL team mission that was
outed a SEAL team.
Yeah. They're not supposed to be there.
He's not supposed to politicize meetings with military people. He's been going to these military kind of boosting these boosts, these speeches stateside, and he's been making him political. You don't do that. And then he violates the Hatch Act by going into Iraq, and then either he produces the hats and signs them. And there are some people who actually had Trump flags.
Yep.
What was interesting is one photographer, I think it was either from Bloomberg, caught a bunch of military folk. And some of these people are going, what are you thinking? You brought your Trump flag with you, or you brought Trump hats with you. And that is a military code violation. That is not supposed to be.
Right.
I'm not getting on your case because you're just a military person. I'm getting on your case because this is your job. You're supposed to know this.
Well, the president's supposed to know it. And $10 says somebody fucking told him and he just didn't give a shit. He's probably too busy worrying about whether or not he's got toilet paper on his shoe. I mean, what a year. Name one fucking president that has ever had that happen. Name one.
Well, Gerald Ford fell down steps.
No, but that was Chevy Chase.
What's the difference?
That was Ford came down the steps of the of Air Force One, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. A couple times, in fact. He kept stumble-bumming. God, nobody else has done anything as bad as that.
No.
I mean, he is the very, very... He can go into the history books as the very, very worst.
Yeah. On so many different levels, even if you're one of his.
I do like the fact that, you know, Nancy's come to play.
Yeah, I mean, she has.
She ain't playing with him. She's gonna be delivering some pretty big knockout punches. So, I mean, the thing is, whatever you want to say about her, whatever you are in the spectrum of being a Democrat, she knows how to count.
Yes, she does.
Which is something Boehner and Ryan could never learn how to do. That's why they never could ever get, until that one time, the when they were trying to invalidate Obamacare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how many times did they have it in Boehner's?
80-something.
80 times. Fuck them. She knows what she's doing. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I think she's already broken him.
Well, there's nothing like an uppity lady to just really get under his pink skin.
Oh, you know? God.
Think about it.
What do you think about, though? You're right. Shut down the government. He's going to shut down the border. Whatever the fuck else is he going to do to try to distract from Mueller's investigation or any other shit that's going to come down?
Yep. Yeah, so, it's nuts.
Buckle up. It's going to be intense.
So here's what I'm thinking. I'm flipping through all of the things we were going to talk about.
Right.
I think we should record another show this weekend. Because I've taken time off of the other shows for the weekend. Beautiful. And we'll cover 2018 news.
Beautiful. We can do that. We can definitely do that.
Okay. And then this one's our entertainment portion. So this year, let's just wrap up the year. Okay. 2018 started basically with Black Panther.
That's right.
It's been that long.
Oh my God. That seems like forever.
Doesn't it though? Especially after the weird emotional crush that was Infinity War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was right. I think it was the right thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we lived through, we love these characters. They, the stakes keep getting higher and higher. And just maybe being brought to your knees is not a bad thing at all.
Nope.
And because this helps keeping establishing. We're still developing the arc of character somewhere. After three movies now? So let's see what happens. I love the ending. I love the ending of Infinity Wars, because as everyone's, just being turned into dust, Nick pulls out the pager and just presses the button for Captain Marvel. And unless you knew that was Captain Marvel, that was for Captain Marvel.
Right.
We just know. We know it's going to happen. Or do we?
Well, I'm going to be interested to see how. Is it Captain Marvel who saves the universe, or is it?
I think so.
Ant-Man.
Paul Rudd.
Yep.
That would be the irony of ironies.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's Paul Rudd, Hollywood's nicest guy.
Absolutely.
Until we find out something horrible. Which I doubt, because he's Hollywood's
nicest guy. I don't ever want to find out anything horrible about Paul Rudd. I love that man.
I don't either. Or Seth Rogen. Or
Tom Hanks.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I would refuse to live. I could not live. Tom Hanks, if you ever want to watch 5 minutes of a really bad movie that Tom Hanks is in, but there's a really great line. Tom Hanks comes out of an airplane and volunteers. He's not supposed to be there. And he's in Indonesia or something. He walks out of the plane. He's got this white tux, white tie. He's trying to light a cigarette. He goes, "Holy Jesus, Mary and Joseph, we're about a mile from the sun."
What was that?
Volunteers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did like Volunteers.
Him and John Candy.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's uneven. Yeah. He's a rich boy and he's got a gambling problem. I think he's at Yale or something. And, in order to get out of it, he kind of skips town and he winds up on a plane that all of these Peace Corps volunteers are headed toward Indonesia, including his then future wife, Rita Wilson.
Yeah. No, that John was an okay movie.
There you go.
I do remember
Highlight
that.
Highlight entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we had Infinity War. What else did we have this year? Did we have Justice League this summer? No. So what was this summer?
I don't remember. I really don't remember. What was? Oh, God. What else did we have? Oh, God. Big.
Was Justice League this year?
I think so.
I think it was. I have to look. The Meg. Did you see The Meg?
No. What is The Meg?
That's the one about the prehistoric shark.
Oh, really?
The Megalodon. It was Megalodon. So much fun.
Really?
Yeah. It was just entertaining as hell. And the science was flawed and screwy and nothing made any sense. And I just loved the thought of Jason Statham being a, professional shark wrangler to the point that I watched Deep Blue again,
Oh, God.
Yeah, that one was a lot of fun. Spider-Man, Into the Dark.
I know. Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, there's a lot of forgettable shit this year, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Didn't see that. How was that?
Oh, it was good. So good.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
You know, take my complete obsession with Evangeline Lilly out of it, and it is still a wonderful movie.
Yes. And there were a couple of others. There was, let us not forget Deadpool 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was wonderful. That was fantastic.
And, of course, Venom. Did you saw it?
It was okay. Like you keep saying, there was nothing about that movie that my low expectations didn't help. and I went in with the lowest of expectations. I'm like, this is going to be bad. And then I walked out and I was like, that was a fun movie.
Incredibles 2.
I loved it. That one was awesome. The fight between Jack-Jack and the raccoon was probably the best fight scene of the year.
That was inspired.
Mm-hmm.
God, I think Brad Bird had said that they had that somewhere else. And I think they kept it for this movie. I should check in on that.
Yeah.
So then when we come back to do this, I'll definitely confirm that.
Sure.
That's a good thing. But everybody's been keeping their head down this year and just working their asses off.
Yeah.
Go see a good movie. Go see a movie that makes you forget your troubles, because there's plenty of them in the world.
Well, and we've got coming up, Captain Marvel's the next big picture.
Yep. April, March?
March. And then end of April is Avengers 4. That one looks amazing. I don't know if you caught the trailer on that one yet.
I did. Yeah, that was great.
That one looks really good.
Tony's in trouble. Tony's never in trouble, but he's in trouble.
Yep. Yeah. No, we got cool stuff coming. We've had cool stuff behind us enough that, you know, I'm embarrassed at the riches, you know, that I have. You know, there's some good shit going on.
Yeah. Well, I think the best thing is just being able to have our shit get together and us electing a house.
Yep.
It's there are disappointments. You know, it's not everything. There are horrors. We're up against a very authoritarian virus right now. Yeah. And we've got to keep our shit together. We cannot get separated like we did in 16. And be
the Bernie bros and the Hillary bots just need to find a way to get along. And they only have to get along until the day after the election. They can go back to being little bitter gutter snipes at one another, you know. But in the meantime, chill the fuck out.
Better fucking radar about, especially like Green Party candidates. They are there to pull other votes away.
Yep.
Jill Stein. That was a total fucking setup.
Yep.
And people could not see that. And they didn't. And so for the totality of all the votes that you had in Wisconsin and wherever, you threw your vote away. And now we've got what we've got. She was there for that purpose.
Yeah. She didn't believe even know. Me. Well, maybe she did.
Huh? Was it?
Maybe she did know.
She knew everything. The whole thing was just a fucking setup. Yeah. I didn't take them seriously.
No, not at all. Which, to our detriment. You know, again, a lot of blame to go around.
And I love blame.
There was just, you know, and again, it was me screaming at my fucking TV, you know, every time they're like, well, the American people will never elect Donald Trump. And I'm like, you're so fucking dumb. Shut up. Get him off the goddamn screen. He's not news.
Shut up.
Because I knew, and I will not stop saying I told you so, because I was preaching that for a year and a half, man.
Right.
Ugh.
Right. So with that in mind,
mm-hmm.
we can then wrap that part up, and we can just say, that's good for that.
Thank you, listeners, for listening to this, our entertainment roundup for 2018. Next episode, we will talk about our news roundup for 2018. How about that?
Yes, that would be most excellent. helps it make it easier to get through the year, being able to speak with you about this stuff. So that is my Christmas gift to you.
Are we gonna? Oh, you're talking to me? That seems like a Christmas gift for you, Tom.
Yeah, here it comes. No, actually, I think it's this.
Shut the fuck up, Tommy.
Everybody loves the things you do, from the way you talk to the way you move. Everybody here is watching you, 'cause you feel like home. You're like a dream come true. But if by chance you're here alone, can I have a moment before I go? 'Cause I've been by myself all night long, hoping you're someone I used to know. You look like a movie, you sound like a song. God, this reminds me of when we were young. Let me photograph you in this light, in case it is the last time that we might be exactly like we were before we realized we're a sort of getting old that made us restless. It was just like a movie. It was just like a song. I was so scared to face my fears. Nobody told me that you'd be here. And I swear you moved overseas. That's what you said. Just like a song. When we were young, when we were young, when we were young, when we were young. It's hard to admit that everything just takes me back to when you were there, to when you were there. Like a movie, it was just like a song. My God, this reminds me.